Good thing we don't have a real mirror. On the wall, hanging from a nail, we keep a tin lid. Avon pulled it off an empty coffee tin way back when, and it works all right so long as we keep from denting it. I bring my temple closer, but it's hard to see for myself. Rarely do I find myself wishing someone was around to take care of me. Now is one of those times. And it would be especially nice if that someone were named Derek. Oh, how his girlfriend would love that. The thought makes me queasy, so I dismiss it, and squint to examine the wound. Where the brick got me, the largest of the cuts by my temple, the blood's crusted. I wipe away the dried, flaky, reddish-brown bits. After a few dabs, I have to pull back. Not from pain, from surprise. I'd expected the two flaps of separated skin to be, well, separate. But already they've joined together, formed a seam. Only in a few spots where the slice was deepest can I see tender pink flesh underneath. I've always been a fast healer, it's true. This is really fast, though. Not that I'm complaining. I toss the cloth onto the laundry pile and walk back quietly, careful not to wake Avon, then look around for something to wear. Normally, I just sport my red leather suit since the festivities usually get rolling after the race. But that's at Derek's. And destroyed. After a few minutes of scrambling, lifting trunks and tossing aside pants that haven't fit my butt for years, I find my outfit for tonight's soiree. In a lovely pile, accompanied by only a few dust balls. Perfect. Black tank, check. Grommet and buckle black leather vest, check. Tan suede leggings? Check. Spare canteen? Check, as Dunn now has my other one. I run to the bathroom, turn the spigot, and fill it only halfway. Don't want to over-ration. Back in the main room, I find my Hessians. Check and check. Last, I throw on my utility belt. Knowing that I'm going to be cold for the walk, I buckle on both my sleeves. A jacket's around here, somewhere, but I'd just take it off when I got to the tank anyway. Then I'd lose it. Better to be cold for a little while. One last time, I look to Avon. On her wrist is the cuff comb I've given her, just in case. I reach under the bed for the orange bottle and take out another Dilameth, which I leave on the bedside table with the water. Feathers, I whisper, kneeling closer. Her eyes stay shut, but she musters a "hmm," so I know she's heard me. I'm going to the tank, but I'll be back soon. You have the calm. Don't forget. She tilts her chin, up, then down, an even weaker response than the last. I stand up, walk to the door. Hope she doesn't open her eyes just then. Leaving her hurts, physically hurts, in more ways than I can pin. Guilt twists itself in my gut, insists that I'm not doing the right thing. Going to a party of all places, even though I'm going to help us. But that's not even the worst of it. My imaginings, they're what do me in. Every time I step out the front door, I picture what coming back could look like. Because if my worst memory is of the time I found Avon alone but alive at the sick house, I can think of only one thing that's worse. Finding her dead in our home, alone. Part 2. Chapter 12. 9:45 p.m., Saturday. The cracked Mad Ave solar-powered streetlights shed an eerie, fragmented, bluish glow over the boardwalk. I'm trying to pass a family of four on either side, but they're buying seeds from a vendor, probably for a private roof plot up north, and they're lollygagging. It's damn near impossible. Though the tank isn't far from here, a straight shot down, tonight is so crazy, it'll take me twice as long. As I finally weave through them, my spare cuff comb buzzes on my wrist. I look down, see a message from Benny. Told your Rimbo back to the garage. Looking into the problem. May take a while. Sure, sure. Benny says it'll take a while. But if I know him, he just doesn't want me to hound him every 10 minutes. He'll have an answer soon, no doubt. I keep on through the market, slowing when I spot Zora's cart. She's my favorite. a gap-toothed little punk kid with a red afro and so many freckles on her face, you'd never know what color her skin really was. She's the smartest sneak on the walk, always offers to check for airdrops from her wealthy West Isle grandma. Then, when her dad goes on break, she'll call me over, ladle me a bit of bona fide black market upstate fresh for Avon. Her grandma gets it by way of the mainland, and I doubt there are even 100 people in the ward who can afford the stuff. But living off rainwater ain't so bad, so long as it rains. "Hey, Z!" I shout across the avenue. She sees me and waves. I start to walk closer, but a push to my shoulder sends me rolling forward. I spin around, angry, and spit, "Watch it!" before realizing that the push was by no means an accident. It's Kent. He laughs at me, lazy, thin-lipped. Threads of his ink-black hair fall on his face. With his hands in the pockets of an oversized trench, he drawls, "If it isn't the Red Rider," and strides up with rubber-band legs, all loose and relaxed, ready to mess with me. I was so hopeful, and look here, now you've ruined my whole night. He throws up his arms. "Of course, your being alive is an easy enough problem to fix." Jones passes me by and nods, smirking, his ponytailed sandy hair pulled tidily out of the back of his round cap. "Sorry to disappoint," I say, and turn around, hoping for a smooth getaway. I'm not in the mood for this. But Jones is there, cutting me off. I face Kent again. He's been joined by the dreaded duo. Tansy's and Neela's arms are looped around each other like shadows. The girls watch me, adjusting their tops to reveal a bit more flesh, and they snigger. It kills me. More than the derby guys, even. All I'd need is one of them. Just one other girl at the races would even the balance enough.
"You've got some fuel on your face, honey," Neela says when she sees me looking at her.
Coyly, she points at me, bowing her knees together. Then she goes wide-eyed, fake as those dolls with the movable eyelids. I know better than to touch my face, though. We've been through this one before.
"Don't you have tulips to plant, Neela, or whatever it is that you do all day?"
I pretend to flick her away like she's a bug on my thumb. If only it were that easy. She rolls her eyes, and when she looks at Kent, I see her barely nod in my direction. Uh-oh. She's calling in the big guns, and Kent's been dying for an excuse to pummel me as it is. I look up. They're still there, and Kent's just getting closer.
"Hope you enjoyed your lucky streak while it lasted," Kent says, laughing as he nears and cracking his knuckles. "After tonight, I'm not sure you'll be fit to hold a steering wheel."
His eyes always target me like he's looking down a gun barrel.
So why do I always wonder if he's actually going to do it? Kent hasn't clobbered me bloody yet, but each time we get into a row like this, it feels more and more likely.
I ain't gonna find out if tonight's the night, though. I smile, and I wave, and then, though I sort of hate myself for taking the coward's way out, I turn on my heel, and I run like an animal. Booking it through the labyrinth of steel-wheeled wagons, with the old fabric warehouse in view, my breathing goes too ragged, and I have to stop. I pull over, nearly tripping on a girl I swear I know, shortish, dreadheaded, wearing fairy wings, and probably on her way to the tank. I don't say hi. I just duck under one of the striped umbrellas that dot the boardwalk. From here, I can spot the HBNC patrol hornets. They're buzzing around the building's exterior. Crouched farther beneath one of the vendor's carts, I watch them through the wheel's spokes, waiting to see if Kent or Jones catches up. No one comes. I grow impatient. The tank is less than 5 minutes away, so I slide out from under the cart and start walking. 100 paces out, from behind me, I hear a swishing noise. Someone's following? The thought makes me stop short. Staggers my step. Another pair of boots staggers after me, too. I whip around, squatted low to the walkway. Instinctively, my hand goes to my ankle where I've stashed my small blade. From this vantage point, I can't see much through the stalls, but I'm not dumb. Kent, maybe? My blood runs just a little bit quicker, hotter than before.
It wouldn't be the chief. He's long gone, I'm sure, anxious to leave the ward quick as possible. I don't know who's back there, so I slide beneath a few stalls to throw whoever it is off track. The sooner I make it to the tank, the better. Once I'm inside, whoever is following me will have a hard time keeping up. I break into an easy jog, feeling the beats tremble up the boardwalk and into my knees. They're so heavy. They're the partygoers' audio bass version of a breadcrumb trail, but it's not even necessary. Just follow the patrol hornets. It's still early, but those guys go where the crowds will go. And just like at the races, the bouncers aren't just here to act as musclemen. These guys don't check IDs, neither. They're checking blood. Ro! I call out when I'm close enough, slowing as I near. I push through a few guys my age, all wearing patchy pleather pants and sleeveless tees, with dog collars around their necks. It's like the uniform for badassery around here. One of them curses at me, but then he sees who I am and shuts his mouth. Even the tough guys step aside when the dragsters come through. The biggest of the big bouncers turns my way, arms folded over his chest, looking rough.
Glad to see you're in the land of the living, Ro comments through blackened teeth.
Even under the weak solar lamplights, his jacket reflects a bright and shiny neon yellow, so everyone can see he's a bouncer. He blathers on for a bit about how the derbies were sure I'd kicked it, sure I'd finally bit the dust. I zone out, scan the crowd. First to see if Kent is around. Then I find myself looking for the one person I'm always looking for, hoping he's here. Without the girlfriend, of course. She's a wet blanket if there ever was one. It wasn't that bad. I brush him off. You've been listening to too much derby gossip. Just as I'm about to stick out my arm so Ro can see the date of my last test, I see a young girl wandering round the outside of the entrance to the tank. Who's that? I ask, but Ro just shrugs, says he's never seen her. She looks familiar, but under the damned lights it's so buzzy and dim, I can't tell. Be right back! I wave Ro away, and he calls after me. He could tackle and taser me for being in the yellow zone. Only those confirmed with zero or undetectable viral levels can hang here. But the girl, I know her. She's in the yellow zone too, about to get tested. Waif of a build, skin too sallow, blonde near white hair. Avon? My heart lurches in my chest, pushes itself against my very ribcage. She's supposed to be in bed. My instincts revved. I have to protect her. I have to get to her. I have to bring her home. She's sick. That can't be Avon, though. It's just not possible. I don't care. My muscles are kicked into gear. I dodge the bouncers already positioned, a wall in front of me. Good thing big guys don't look down much. Avon! I holler, still not entirely sure of myself. There's no way she could have left the racks. I've got to be wrong. The girl turns around to face me. She's still sticking out her arm from the test as a bouncer pulls away the needle. Stop! I call, sprinting up, ready to yank her away. Rennie! The girl smiles. The bouncer drops her hand, focuses his attention on the scanner. It's her, but it's not her. This girl is shining, wearing a grin brighter than an electric moon. Not to mention, she's upright, on her own. Wobbly on her feet, yes, and her skin still has that algae green tinge to it that makes her look not quite right. But she's here. All my tongue can do is loll around in my mouth, sluggish and thick. I've got no words. I watch her get her ex. The bouncer takes her arm and turns over the scanner. He waits for it to get white hot, then down it goes. Avon bites her lip, and I see her eyes are watering. But she doesn't cry out, not even a peep. I don't know what to be confused about first when nothing makes sense. Somewhere in the tunnels of my brain, I hear the bouncer declaring that she's good to go and she should have fun. But no, that can't be. My sister is sick, deadly and irreversibly sick, because there's a tumor, a giant bracking lump of a tumor lodged against her skull. So really, what the hell kind of alien is this new girl anyway? Avon snaps me out of my stupor with a hug. Her mittens find their way underneath the tight corkscrews of my hair to the back of my neck. There they rest, warming me up as I hold her tight. We're still in the yellow zone. My vel unconfirmed, so when I feel a hand on my shoulder, I'm just thankful that I've already got enough pull here that they haven't tasered me already.
What are you doing?
Is all I can manage. I show Ro the latest X on my arm. Never, not even once, taking my eyes off Avon.
I'm better, Ren.
She says this like she had the flu, not a death sentence.
How did you even get here?
Before she answers, my mind wheels back to the walk over.
It was you. You were following me.
She nods fiercely, like she's gotten away with stealing cookies from one of the toughest Mad Ave vendors. I take her wrist, a thing so thin my fingers wrap around with room to spare.
We need to get you home.
She pulls away, twisting herself from my grip. I wasn't holding hard, but I don't know if I'm more shocked by the fact that she could do it or the fact that she did. We don't disagree. Ever.
But my vel? I'm not contagious,
she whines, like that explains everything.
I can be here. I'm allowed. He said so.
She points to the bouncer, whose hawk eyes watch us, suspicion creeping in.
Avon,
I whisper through gritted teeth. Looping an arm through hers, I lead her out of the yellow zone.
I don't care what the test says. You are sick. Blood doesn't lie.
Her hazel eyes are steely, her expression harder than I've ever seen it.
And I feel fine.
And I'm about to say something I've only heard adults say. This isn't a discussion. We're leaving. Now. Yeah, that tasted as bad in my mouth as it sounded. I think I even pointed at the ground when I said now. Avon unloops our arms without saying a word. She walks back into the yellow zone, sticks out her arm for one of the bouncers again. I run up to her, grabbing her by the shawl. The last thing I want to do is make a scene here, of all places. But I can't let her stay. She spins around, twisting herself away.
No, Ren, I won't go back!
Her eyes look wild, but then she stands still, only her white blonde hair moving with the wind.
I feel all right. The scanner thingy says I'm good to go. Please, Ren. I've never had a night like this.
Everything about her changes right then. She wilts, no anger left in her.
Look at it.
She pulls her hair to the side, revealing the spot where the tumor should be. But it's not there. Not much of it, anyway. I bring one finger to her hairline behind her ear and feel around. One small lump, no larger than the size of a coin, peeks out, barely noticeable.
How is it possible?
Tumors don't just spontaneously shrink. I rub my forehead, confusion settling in my brain. Boulder heavy. My fingers peel something crinkly off the skin near my temple. I realize I'm rubbing at the gash where the brick hit. The scab, it's already flaking off.
You see?
She whispers.
Avon,
I want to stop her, explain what's going on. But I don't know. The last few hours rewind through my head. I met with the chief. There was the raid. Avon's fever. I told her about the fresh. I let her drink from the canteen. We both drank from the canteen.
It's not possible.
But I didn't think she could be here, and here she is. And I didn't think that her tumor was gone.
And it is. Mostly. I want to live before I die,
she continues. Her eyes find mine, serious.
One night of fun, Ren. That's all I need. The tumor's not gone. I know it. But if it comes back, I want to make it. I want to hold on.
She'll want to hold on. Those words pierce my other thoughts, put the questions on pause. Whatever's made her better, I don't want to think about it too hard. You don't question miracles. I can't say no to her. We don't have forever. we only have now. Reluctant, I nod. Arm in arm, we walk into the warehouse. The elevator arrives. It takes us down, well below water level. We drop so far our ears crackle. Avon tugs at her lobes.
Weird,
she giggles. I want to laugh with her, but the whole ride, I'm in a daze, too confused, too frantic to even think. Breathe, I remind myself, and together we feel the bass beats rising up through the soles of our feet. The elevator walls vibrate in time with the ding, ding, dinging from floor to floor. Avon smiles at me and clasps my hand in her mittened ones, rocking on her heels. Should I not have agreed? She looks so happy. I push aside the gnawing fear that comes along with anything good, that it will leave just as quickly. She's here now. That's what matters, I tell myself. But it doesn't stop me from wanting to freeze frame this moment. Avon and me, walking into our first party together. Ever. Like we really do have our whole lives ahead of us. Chapter 13. 10 p.m., Saturday. The doors open. We're in a fish tank, and that makes us the fish. The tank didn't get its name from nowhere. It's a basement, gutted and fitted anew with floor-to-ceiling concave sheets of glass. One of the few lucky buildings in the ward to be restructured after the washout. Never completed, though. Upstate pulled the plug on any rebuilding because of the appeal, and we got left with half-finished buildings, like this one. Installed with some mighty fancy technology, but no faucets in the bathrooms. Avon and I both look around, though she's the one with wonder on her face.
This place is incredible,
she yells, spinning in a circle to get the full 360.
I can't believe you get to come here every month. I think this is heaven.
The mucky water has been set aglow with underwater lighting, and Avon is plastering her face to the glass to get a better look. It strikes me as funny that for us in the ward, heaven is down, not up.
Can you believe I've never seen it from before?
She asks. I don't answer, and my appreciation for the view right this moment is minimal. It just conjures up less than glamorous memories from last night. Reminds me how, for the first time, I've come to the tank as a loser. I turn to face Avon again and catch sight of her running off, skipping from glass panel to glass panel.
Wait up,
I call through the music, but she never stops for longer than a few seconds. Not even the whirlwind of colored lights overhead has time to catch her. I run after, zigzagging myself through a dozen dancing bodies, until finally, she's winded. Her breath leaves a circle of fog on the glass in front of her face. She looks at me, all seriousness.
How come?
I see her asking, but her voice trails off and I can't hear her anymore. I move us a few feet to the left, under one of the anti-noise beams. They cancel out the music using opposite sound waves or some other science voodoo of the sort. It's quiet under here, but I can still feel the heavy electronic beats because they make my nose hairs buzz.
How come you never told me how wonderful this place is?
Avon asks again, looking around our invisible bubble like it's magic. I'm quiet. Outside this window, we watch the sad remains of a parked truck as it does nothing but rust. I didn't want to make you feel bad, I say at last. That's all. Didn't want to make you wish for things that couldn't be. Avon sighs.
All I had was my imagination.
Hours to do nothing but wonder when it was finally going to be over. At that, I flinch, though she's not saying it to be mean.
It would have been nice to have something like this to think about.
The realization stings. I'd never thought of it that way. All these years, I could have been treating her more like a sister, telling her things. I'm about to say that I'm sorry, but she tugs at my hand, and I know she knows. Some friends are here, I say, thinking how now is as good a time as any to catch her up to speed on the last 3 years. I glance around the club, landing on every near reddish head of hair I see. None of them are him, though. You want to take a loop together?
Lead the way. But first...
Avon rifles around for something in her shawl, opening a small pocket in one of the corners.
You need makeup.
I really don't know this girl. Is this what she's been thinking about all of these years stuck in bed? Parties and makeup?
Where did you get that?
I examine the stick of Kohl eyeliner like it's a black bullet gone astray that could hit my face at any moment.
One of my scavenges. Been saving it since nails. Can I?
She asks, leaning in with the weapon of cosmetic destruction. No way. I shield myself with my hands. That's all you. Avon leans her head on my shoulder and gives me her best puppy eyes. That's all it takes. Just one tear-jerking iota of unhappiness on her face, even the fake kind, and I'm a goner. I lean my back against the cool glass and close my eyes. Fine, but please don't make me look like one of those girls on Broadwalk.
What girls?
She looks at me, confused, and unscrews the stick of compressed coal. I open one eye. Oh, right. Forget it. Just, you know, go easy. We're quiet for a few moments, and I try not to squint while she prods over my eyeballs with that black junk.
Open.
I open my eyes.
Close.
This is exasperating. She uses her fingers, presumably to blend the stuff.
Ren, you need moisturizer.
I'm mentally giving her the middle finger. You know when your eyes are closed, but by way of some freaky sixth sense you can tell you're being looked at? Well, that's the vibe I'm getting right now. So when I hear Avon tittering like she's trying to be quiet, I know it's bad.
That's a good look for you.
It's a guy's voice. Deep, kinda husky. I can't quite tell because he's standing outside the anti-noise beam.
Oh no. He's not here.
He's not here. He's not... He's here. Derek. I groan. Don't you dare laugh. I make like I'm going to throw him a left hook.
You look hot, Renny.
Avon nods her head with altogether too much cheer.
The liner makes your eyes really exotic. Like Cleopatra or Mata Hari.
Both sluts who died gruesome deaths. At least they were pretty. Though I did just suffer a major blow to the head, I think Derek is kind of... gaping? His mouth is open and yet there are no words there. Oh, this is too good. No making fun, I say, pointing at him. Derek laughs and touches his hand to his chin. Avon mimics him. Together, they look like they are examining a confusing piece of art, like that one of the toothy shark in the formaldehyde. The physical impossibility of death in the mind of someone living. Saw that one at the New Met with the orphanage. Everyone stared at it just like that, how Avon and Derek are staring at me. So, I guess that makes me the shark. And what do you know, I'm in a tank, too. I turn and try to catch my reflection in the glass, but a 7-inch thick pane of glass isn't the best place to look for accuracy. Still, Avon's handiwork appears... not awful. I'm caught in a moment of unadulterated girliness when Derek taps me on the shoulder. Don't I get an introduction? I didn't know you had friends who are girls. He points to Avon, the girl he's heard about for 3 years but has never met. Brack. How the hell am I going to explain this? Derek, I say, pulling him under the beam. We're pushing it to capacity, so we have to speak louder. Meet Avon. I draw a deep breath. I certainly can't tell him that I think some miracle water shrank her tumor. Then he'd think that brick to my head did enough damage to send me to the loony bin. We didn't even have time to think of a story. And really, what kind of story would help in this situation? Meet my sister, Avon, who, as you know, has been deathly ill for quite a few years. Kidding, she's been fine. P.S., she's a certified club bunny. The Avon? His eyebrows shoot up. The whites around his iris is practically glowing purple under the black light. I can see the suspicion there. He looks at her. He looks at me. He plays ping-pong with his eyes. To me. And what happened to your face? I thought we'd established that, and so I point at Avon. Memory loss much? This one had to turn me into an art project.
Avon grins.
You'd get an A. Actually, I'd get an A.
With a flick of his wrist, Derek silences her, which makes me want to silence him with the flick of my fist.
No, Ren, he interrupts. Your face. Yesterday you needed stitches. Remember that giant-sized gash by your left eye?
I bring my hand to my temple, covering where the wound should be. A few minutes ago, the scabs fell away, and only a few hours ago, the flesh had seamed together.
This is bigger than my being a fast healer. It's got to be, because both Avon and me drank the water.
Unbelievable. That's the only word for it. I have no answers, no explanations, but I know one thing. My gut's sending a message loud and clear. I have to play it off like it's no biggie. Can't have anyone knowing about the fresh find. And if it's more than that, even more of a reason to keep quiet.
I'm a quick healer, I answer, falling back on that, despite how weak it sounds. Remember that time I sliced my arm on the carburetor? I was better in days.
Days, Ren, not a day. I avoid his eyes. If I look at them, there's no way I'll be able to lie.
Across the room, Terrence has just stepped out of the elevator. His gaze fans around but doesn't land on us.
Tara's here, guys.
The moment I step outside the sound bubble, music floods my ears. Derek follows me, then Avon. Thankful for the distraction from questions I just can't answer, I stick my fingers in my mouth and whistle. Tara sees us and shakes his head as he shuffles over, addled by the attention. After the high pitch cuts out, I realize there's a loser's spotlight on me. People stare. A few point. I slink closer to the glass, trying to find a corner where all those eyes can't reach. Tare strides across the room, eyes not on me but behind me. By the time he's near enough, I expect him to stop, say hi, I don't know, address the girl who just hailed him with 100 decibels of finger whistle, but he just ignores my ass. It's only when he stops behind Avon that he turns toward me, mouthing and pointing.
Who's that?
I shouldn't have let her stay. Terrence is going to remember her from the orphanage. Had quite a crush on Avon, too, if I recall, though it's been a while. I'd say it was too bad that Tare was adopted before a real prepubescent relationship had a chance to blossom, but that's ridiculous. He found a home.
That's Avon, I say helplessly, ready for the sky to get on with its falling.
His turf-green eyes widen.
What the? She's...
He stammers, just as confused as the rest of us.
She's here?
T-Bone!
She squeals his orphanage nickname, a name I'd just about forgotten, and pulls him into a bear hug. Terrence looks at me, undecided about hugging her back.
I'm not contagious, she assures him.
She raises up her arm, showing off her fresh, red welt in the shape of an X. It's a prize to her, not a brand. Says with a smile.
Confirmed green.
I don't understand.
He shakes his head.
I always told Ren that miracles exist,
Avon says knowingly. Tare ain't entirely convinced, but a few seconds later, he returns the hug, wrapping his arms around her, squashing her tiny frame against his chest.
You're okay?
He whispers into her hair, dazed as I was. Am. Avon giggles.
How have you been? Do you still like your dad? Did you ever get a mom, too? I want to hear everything. From the moment you were adopted up until this very instant, don't leave a thing out.
She takes him by the wrist and pulls him under one of the free anti-noise beams in the corner.
Don't go too far,
I say first to her, then to Tare. Avon rolls her eyes, and I swear it's like I'm looking at myself.
This is T-Bone, Rennie. She says through a grin. You don't have to worry.
I'll watch her,
Tare calls back, and they duck off. I'd trust Tare with my life, but I don't like this, not one bit. A palm on my arm forces my attention.
What?
I huff, even though I know it's Derek, and whip around. He takes me by the arm, leads me back under the anti-noise beam. Technology is cruel. No one should be denied the right to give
I can't hear you,
as an excuse not to talk at a party. pointing behind me. I really should stay with Avon, I say. What the hell is going on? How is she here? Why would you bring her? I swallow the insult. My jaw clenches. I didn't bring her. She followed me. And why are you acting like I'm hiding something? I don't know how she's here. I just know that she is. Can't you just be happy like the rest of us? I wish I were just happy. Derek's eyes are stuck to my face, clinical and detached. He even leans in, like he's going to examine the wound. When did Avon get better? And when did you notice the cut starting to heal? The questions, they're so specific. Like there's an answer that makes sense. And if I give the right one, he'll figure it all out. A twinge in my gut stops me from answering straight away. I feel myself wanting to lie. Why, though? It's more than not wanting to break CVH guidelines and tell him about the fresh. And it's more than being afraid of him thinking I'm crazy. To be honest, I can't put my finger on it. But I'm not one to ignore my gut. This afternoon, I lie, muttering to himself, that doesn't make any sense. What doesn't make any sense? This whole thing, he answers too quickly. You think that a cut healing in 24 hours, less than that, makes sense? He seems almost angry now, and I'm not sure what to make of it. No, I answer and look away. Of course it doesn't, and part of me, a nagging in the back of my brain, wants to dig deeper, to understand how any of this is possible. But I'm also afraid of looking too closely. Some things, especially good things, disappear once you start picking them apart, trying to understand them. I don't want to explain miracles. Then they stop being miracles and can be undone. Look, I tell him, still avoiding his gaze. All I care about is that she stays here. Alive, healthy, happy. Look at her, Derek. I haven't seen her like this since Nails. I'm not going to question it. What I am going to do, however, is make sure she stays healthy. She's probably thirsty. Hungry, too. I won't have her passing out because I forgot to feed her. Right, he mumbles, dropping his eyes. The questioning, the irritation, it all leaves his face. I'm sorry. That was insensitive. Of course, I'm happy she's better. I'm just concerned, that's all. Let me get her something from the bar. His voice is so earnest that I want to put my arms around him, to hold him. I don't know why it occurs to me in this moment, but I realize that whenever we have any kind of spat, it's always because he cares about me. It's always because he worries. But with Avon healthy and my head wound healed, what could he be worried about? I'll get it, I tell him. Will you watch her for me? Derek nods, glancing back at the two of them. Then, before I turn to step out of the anti-noise beam, someone else steps in. It's her, Kitana. She cozies up to Derek's side, drink in hand, and ignores me completely. I can't ignore her, though. Now that I'm closer, I see. It's not that she's just beautiful. It's like she's made of different stuff. Magnetic. Naked-faced, too, unlike most of the girls around who'll primp themselves unrecognizable. In a sing-song voice. And what's going on over here? Kitana asks Derek, her cheeks dimpling with the sly half-smile she gives him. Makes me want to puke. Derek rubs his jawline and the nape of his neck. His nerves are all over the place. We were just talking, he stammers. He may have said Kitana isn't his girlfriend, but he's sure acting like she is. It's as though he's been caught with his hand in the cookie jar. Wait, does that make me the cookie? Won't you introduce me to your friend? Kitana asks, still not a glance to spare for me. Derek's silent for a moment too long, and so I introduce myself instead. Ren, I say, waiting for her to look at me, in the eye, preferably. Smirking, she actually gives me the up-down.
And how old are you, Ren?
Oh, she's good. Her voice is whipped cream, nothing but sugar. I can see her laughing on the inside. It's right there, in the corners of her eyes. I won't let it get to me, though I understand the jibe. Derek's a few years older than I am. 20, maybe. I just shake my head, show her who the immature one is for asking such an obviously dumb question, and turn to Derek. You'll watch Avon? Of course, he tells me. And as I step out of the anti-noise beam, I hope for his sake he and Kitana aren't together. She may be magnetic, but you've got to be crazy to actually want to be around her. Away from the others, people pin me more easily. I hear the whispers. I'm the one that nearly died. I fold myself into the crowds, hoping I don't see the derbies, and try to disappear below heads much higher than my own, except that makes my next task somewhat difficult. I wasn't lying about wanting to get Avon some food and drink from the bar, but I have another reason for leaving her alone. Officer Justin Corey. He led me to the Fresh. He's got to know something about its unusual side effects. And where did he get his tip? If he's here, I've got to find him. Fast, so I can get back to Avon.
Miss Red, the undead rider!
A voice clucks from behind the bar. Never one for subtlety, this lady.
Step right on over and take your round, darling. On the house.
I guess being the survivor of a recent near-death incident has its perks, aside from, you know, the survival part. I squeeze through the pushing bodies, ignoring the occasional watch it or ugh. Heya, Pidge, I call out, tipping my head up. Way up. Pidge is tall enough to give the Empire clock a height complex. She smiles, toothy but kind, and claps a hand over mine.
Let's celebrate, eh? To not dying. Something bubbly, I think.
Then all I can see is her pigeon gray hair as she rummages behind the bar. Not much in the mood for spirits, I say, but you can help me out another way. Pidge doesn't listen, too busy fighting to free a bottle from the evil clutches of its cork.
Our near-dead racers always get a special round on the house. Only polite it is. Drink up.
She passes me something fizzy and green, and I hear her mutter about the
change in times,
how kids my age couldn't drink legally before their washout, and we'd do just about anything to get liquored up. Always thinking about the customer. That's what I love about Pidge. I take a sip, and she's satisfied.
Now how can I be of service?
You seen any out-of-towners? I ask casually, glancing back to where I left Avon.
What? Who? Out-of-towners? Nah.
Pidge shakes her head. Wait.
Maybe I have.
At that, she pauses, chuckles knowingly. Either you have or you haven't. Which one is it?
I'd say yes. Yes, I have.
Exasperated, I spin around on the stool. Standing right in front of me, one hand about to tap my shoulder, I see Justin Corey. Chapter 14. 10:15 p.m., Saturday. You, I start, unprepared, jumping off the stool. You're here! So he has no idea I met with Dunn, or that I know he's not really with the D.I. At least until I get some answers. I'd like to keep it that way. Whatever he knows about the water, I want to know too. Not just because Chief asked me to either. So long as Avon's involved, it's information I need, for myself, for her. Though I wouldn't turn down the green, it's not like we don't need it. Justin cocks an eyebrow, clasps his hands behind his back. You thought I might not show? I realize I don't know what I'm thinking, because it hits me that Justin Corey could be anyone. He could be worse than the D.I., a corporate bigwig with money to burn, looking to be the first to get his hands on a gold mine. My throat parches. Wish I hadn't sipped on that drink. Suddenly meeting up with him seems like a very bad idea. Anxious, I scan the dance floor for any hired help he might have tagging along. A muscle man, maybe. Then I look to the corners of the club. Coast seems clear, but with so many people around, there's room for error. I keep my eyes down, away from his. Pointing in the direction of the bathrooms, I yell,
"Follow me!"
over the music, and lead the way through the pulsing lights. Heads turn as we pass. I'm already known in the ward, and this guy sticks out like a sore thumb. Shoes shined, suspenders for holding up his pants. He's dressed the way the Derbys wish they could but don't have the money to pull off. My chest buzzes with all the attention we're drawing, and not in a good way. Inside the bathroom, glad to be away from the crowds, I swallow my relief and check under the stalls to make sure we're alone. Then I lock the door. Almost immediately, Justin leans his back up against it. In my throat, my breath catches, and I hope he don't notice. I don't like this. Him cutting off the exit feels like a threat. Then, all politeness, he says, "I'm sorry to hear about your accident. It must have been terrifying. I can't imagine doing what you do." He's so clearly not with the DI, I don't know how to even reply. Spotting the cuts on my face, what's left anyway, Justin leans in, gives me the same look Derek did, only his reads more amazement than anger. "You didn't have this scar yesterday." "No," I answer, wary, slight scrape from the crash.
"And it's already healed?"
His stance is casual, back still up against the wall, knee bent, but the words sound shrill, tense, excited. He knows something. Tucking his hands into his front pants pocket.
"So, let's talk," Justin begins,
but then he stands up straight, says, "Oh, yes," and reaches in his breast pocket. The envelope he pulls out is crisp and white. Tells me how loaded he must be, since neither the aisle nor the ward harvests trees. That's only done upstate, or on the mainland, and imported goods are pricey.
"For you," he says, passing it over. "I'm one to keep my word. I said you would get your money, whether or not you were successful."
Who is this guy? Even the tassels on my hessians are amazed. He's keeping his promise. I open the envelope, count the money. It's all there, neatly paper-clipped together. A sum that would amount to my winnings if I hadn't thrown the race. Stuffing the green into my bra, I relax a bit. Whoever he is, he seems decent. More decent than most of the Derbys or dragsters. Far more decent than the DI.
"You'll get the extra."
He eyes the scarring across my temple, and with a nod adds, "depending on whether or not you tell me what you found." He seems so sure I found something. A rap on the bathroom door cuts my thoughts short. "Occupied!" I shout back, while I replay the last 30 seconds in my head. The way he nodded to my cut, there's no doubt about it. He believes the two are connected. To Justin, in a whisper,
"It's not just fresh water, is it?"
Someone is still banging their fist against the door.
"Ren, you in there?"
Tare's voice calls from the other side, a sharpness that I'm not used to, like he's afraid. I reach for the knob, but Justin blocks it with his body.
"It's Avon," Tare shouts, and now the sharpness makes sense. "She's not feeling well. Something's wrong. You should come out."
"No," I think. "She was fine not 10 minutes ago." I reach for the knob again and look up at Justin, expecting him to try and stop me. I'll fight him if need be. But his clear baby blue eyes drop, concerned. There's worry there. Without hesitation, he slides out of the way, even opens the door. He's letting me leave? Again, his decency is a shock, but there's no time to wonder at it. Immediately, Tare drags me by the arm, cuts straight through the dance floor rather than walking the long way around. The way he grips my wrist, his speed, how he pushes people aside. He wouldn't be rushing like this if something weren't wrong. Really wrong. Panic clenches my stomach, the slow fuse of a bomb, waiting, combined with the heavy beats pounding away. My heart's pace rises too many notches, too fast. I have to force myself to breathe. We reach the other side of the tank, and I spot her. She's crouched against the glass wall, head hanging low. Her near-white hair glows, a purple halo draping around her shoulders, hiding her face. I drop to my knees, clutch the tiny bones of her ankles. Using the back of my hand, I push the long, pale strands over one shoulder, tipping her chin.
"Feathers? Rennie, you're back,"
she mumbles, breaths heavy. A feeble smile.
I'm okay. It's nothing. Just a little weak, that's all.
She leans her head on the wall, glances from Derek to Tear.
See, guys? I'm fine.
Fine. She's definitely not fine. But maybe it's not as bad as I thought. Of course she's weak. She's been in bed for months. Her muscles ain't used to any of this. It was too much, too fast. Still, the panic ticks in my gut. Gently, I wrap my arms around her, lift her to her feet. Let's get you home. She sways, falls against me. 2 years younger. My sister is still a few good inches taller. I stumble backward, catching both of us. A hand low on my back, firm, steadies me. From over my shoulder, Derek yells for Tear to help and rushes to grab her waist. Avon's knees buckle. She collapses onto Derek's side. I watch as her eyes roll back in their sockets, leaving only white behind. Avon? I choke out. The panic in my stomach detonates. Shockwaves rock my body. I can't breathe. There's nothing for me to breathe. It's like I'm back in the straight, ice water flooding my lungs, numbing every muscle and bone from the outside in. No, it's worse. That I could control. I could swim up. I could find air. This now. There's nothing I can control. I can't help her. Her limbs stiffen. She starts trembling, shaking, convulsing. It's too much to watch. What have I done? How could I have let her stay? My fault. This is all my fault. At the realization, my brain pixelates, turns to static, a blank gray-white screen with nothing on. Somewhere else, a world spins in its orbit without me. The club funnels into darkness. Distant, faraway music wails in my eardrums, liquid metal spilling into a mixing bowl with computers. Notes, drag, everything skips. Even in my mind, only one image skips, stuck on repeat. Avon's eyes rolling, rolling, rolling back into her head. I can't stop it. Your shirt! A voice yells from behind me, right at my ear. The closeness of the words, their strangeness, it draws me out of my stupor, grafts me to the present. A shirt? Why? I don't understand. How is any of this happening? Then Terrence's top is off, and I'm back in real time, still watching, still not able to stop anything. Avon's body writhes on the floor. She's on the floor? How did she get on the floor? Your sister is on the floor, and you didn't even see it happen? Tear tilts her head to the side. He holds up his t-shirt, while vomit falls from her mouth, drips down her cheek. She's blank-faced, irises invisible. She doesn't even know that she's just thrown up. Her mind's not there. She's not there. She is, though. I let her come down. I said it was okay. Only an idiot would have done that. I never should have agreed. But she was better. This whole time, I've been blaming myself for allowing her to stay, when there's so much more. Fresh guilt floods my face with heat. I let her drink from my canteen. What kind of a sister am I? Who would let anyone, much less their sick sister, drink untested water? What should I do? I think I ask. No one hears me. And I realize the words never made it past my lips. Everything feels so heavy. My limbs, the air, the music. There's a lump, a brick in my throat. But I'm too ashamed to cry. I want to move to her, to push her hair away, or rest her head in my lap, like I do at home when the headaches get real bad. But my feet are anchors. I don't move. Can't move. Go to her, I tell myself. She needs you. This may be my fault. But she's still my sister. I have to force my guilt to take the back seat. And I do. But when I try to take a step forward,
I realize that someone's been holding me up this whole time. In my ear, Derek whispers, "You're back," and unfolds one arm from my waist. I can only assume he's talking to me as I stagger forward. I can't reach her, though. One of the bouncers pushes me to the side. He doesn't even push, not really. One moment I occupy the space, and another it's his, like displacing air. The bouncer pulls out his scanner and lifts her arm. Anytime someone falls sick in the tank, it's standard protocol for bouncers to take their Vel, even though they already did. The scanner flashes green. Not contagious. He shakes his head. The brackhead isn't even bothering to hide his disappointment as he calls into his cuffcom for an ambulance. To him, the fact that she's sick at all is irrelevant. He's not making any money on her. He'd probably be happy if she turned up contagious. Red, molten anger bubbles to the surface.
"She's going to Ward Hope. Step aside," he says,
motioning for me to move as another bouncer wheels over a stretcher. When I don't budge, he places his two huge hands on my hips, like he's going to move me by force. "Don't put your grubby hands on me," I spit, fighting back a slow, swelling rage. "She's my sister. I'm going with her." He laughs, his grin uneven, like one side of his mouth got caught in a fishing line.
"Sure she is."
I can't help it. All the fear and guilt and shame of the last 15 minutes wants an outlet. It needs a new home, and it lands on a perfectly good target. Instinctively, my hand balls up. It also instinctively pulls back and flies into his arm. Okay, if I'm being honest with myself, this is more about poor anger management than about instinct, and the moment my knuckles make contact with the shining nylon black and yellow fabric of his jacket, it occurs to me that this was not entirely well thought out. I barely feel bone. It's all mush and muscle under there. The bouncer, he don't even flinch. Not a dent, a scowl, a sign that, yes, my fist did in fact make contact with his body. Nothing. He's ignoring me. He can't ignore me. I have to go with her. He has to let me go with her. He's lifting her onto the stretcher, wheeling her away. I rush after, body-checking him to the side. With him out of my way, I lean over Avon. I hardly see the bouncer behind me as his knee buckles and he staggers backward. When he holds onto the stretcher for balance, it rolls out of his grip, and then I see him. He's right behind me. We collide. He elbows me in the ribs at first, tries to push me to the side, but I've got Avon's hand in mine now, and I won't let go. Then I feel the bulk of his elbow like an anvil as it connects with my temple. I go down, hard and heavy, hearing a chorus of curses with the use of only one ear. In the way, way back behind my eyelids, star-like fish swim in the void, and I'm underwater, and I'm underwater. Chapter 15. A ding, 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 ing brings me back to the world. I open my eyes to a blur of light so thick, every other shape is reduced to haloed shadows. My palms dig against these hard silver dots, a floor that looks like bubble wrap, if bubble wrap were metal. I don't know exactly where I am, but the space is small, and I'm moving up. And that rhythmic dinging, I'm in an elevator. Not for the average partygoer, either. It's the tank service elevator, I think. Then I remember getting elbowed in the head, and the rest of it comes back. My lungs prove that they're in working order, and I start heaving, making myself dizzy. "Slow breaths," a voice says, standing over a stretcher. Avon's stretcher. Too quickly I rise to my feet, stumbling into the side of the elevator. She's not moving. My gut hurts, and I'm not sure if it's from the feeling of everything coming to pieces or from that blow to my head. Both, probably. I push the hair from her forehead, wishing we were both back at the racks, curled up in bed, telling each other stories. I'd rather her sick like she was yesterday, not sick like she is now. Is she going to be okay? I ask, watching her stillness. Then I realize, I'm not even supposed to be here with her. Avon and I ain't family, not by blood anyway. How am I allowed here? I look up, and it's Justin's face I see. What? Am I doing here? He finishes, eyes glued to another, more complicated-looking Vell scanner. Then he leans over Avon, tilts her head with one hand to examine something. The tumor. It's back. Visible again. Not as large as before, but I can see it. We both can. I stifle a gasp, shaking my head. Not possible. She's stable, for now. I've given her an anti-inflammatory and a heavy dose of Dilemeth for the pain. No longer contagious, I presume. He doesn't say it the way the bouncer did. The way his brow furrows, his jaw tenses. It's like he cares. Dangling from his neck, a blue dog tag with a hammered image of a snake coiled around a rod. A doctor.
Who are you?
I ask, gripping Avon's hand. She doesn't grip back. Her hand is limp, which just makes me hold on tighter. My name is Callum Pace, he answers, and I'm sorry to have misled you. You don't work for the Blues. He sighs, looks around the elevator. I guess he decides it's safe enough, 'cause he says, not anymore, no. We had a sort of falling out. I now go by the name Justin Corey. Dr. Justin Corey, he says pointedly, and I get the hint. Call him Dr. Corey. After you left the bathroom, I saw this young girl collapse. I knew the bouncers wouldn't provide her with the medical attention she needed, being that she's probably not contagious. So I stepped in. A pause. I hope that's all right with you.
Of course it's okay. A doctor helping my sister, not asking for pay.
When did you first notice her symptoms? He wraps his fingers around her wrist to take her pulse. 3 years ago, I mumble, avoiding his eyes.